I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
It's time for Touché.
It's all right. It's all right. It's all right.
All right.
Tracy's here. It's all right.
In for Dave Lundy tonight, Tracy Seppel.
What did you do to Dave? This is a pretty sharp outfit, huh?
Wow. Thank you. Whoa. Waving hello.
Yeah. Anybody watching on the web, you can see Tracy in her sharp outfit.
And Chris Roebling is also here.
I'm not in a sharp outfit.
No. Nothing. All right.
Chris, I was going to say he was, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's sharp. It's got sharp. It's just sharpness.
Sharpish.
All right. Chris Roebling, Tracy Seppel in Touché tonight.
Touché.
Why don't we start with the poll numbers that were released? ABC poll says that the president's polling around 36%, the worst in 70 years for a president at this stage of his administration. Do you think that the polls are accurate, Chris Roebling, or do you think that...
I think Trump's not particularly popular right now, and I think a wide variety of polls are finding that strain of public opinion. But there are a lot of different ways to look at this. I mean, there's a poll that was out this afternoon about the counties, the key counties in the race, and showed that actually in the most important counties for Trump and his victory last November, he's over 50%.
And right around 50,
so he's got, you know, Trump has had a very tough start, and that's being reflected.
Tracy, what do you think of the numbers? I mean, are they reflective of a current mood in the country? Do you think that they only, once again, I mean, a lot of Republicans will say, well, you know, these polls were wrong around election time. They're wrong now. Where do you think we stand with the president and a poll number this low?
Well, I think it is important to approach poll numbers with a sort of 2017 sensibility that the new tactic is, if you don't like it, it can't be real. If you don't like it, it's fake. If you don't like it, it's not real facts. Or, you know, that's the sort of that's the mentality that we're battling with right now. And so let's just posit that if you don't like these polls, okay, then maybe they're not real. But let's say you do believe in the methodology behind the social scientists conducting national polling, and you think, huh, there's a trend here. And that trend is what? It is that he is deeply unpopular, and that compared to numerous presidents prior to him, he is well below where any of those men were. So what does that mean, I think, is the real question. And I think it is important, Chris, to look at things like county by county polling and what have you. But really the number to watch, and I'm not the first person to say this today, but the number to watch is how many people think impeachment is where we need to be going. And that's going to be something that's going to be closely tracked and of great concern. Most of all, and I can say this with some degree of certainty, you know who watches these numbers? Donald Trump watches these numbers.
Yeah.
I think that.
What do you think of that? I mean, impeachment, the first articles, I guess, were put in over on Friday. But, I mean, that's it
if
seems
the
like that's Democrat or
if the Democrats
or
take the
minority
House
party.
In November of 2018, they will begin impeachment in January of 2019, period. You know, if one, then the other. And if not the first, then not the second. So, I mean, impeachment is purely and utterly political. And really has, I mean, I think that Tracy can apply her rule, since it didn't apply to my, I didn't say these didn't exist, but Tracy can apply her rule to how Democrats are dealing with Trump. They don't like Trump, therefore he's not really president. They don't like Trump, therefore he's not really doing anything. They don't like Trump, therefore he's, you know, a poser, and he is the creature of Vladimir Putin and all of this other stuff. And I think that's their sort of issue about not being able to deal with the rejection of Hillary Clinton and their sort of reticence to engage in any introspection after such a shellacking by somebody they despise and really disrespect.
It pains me that Chris thinks that there's no introspection. I mean, on my part, there is. So give me at least the credit.
But where was my credit for not saying that these were phony polls?
Oh, I feel like you implied it, Chris.
No, I did not. I said there are a lot of.
I said you were a little sketched out.
Play the tape, Justin. Peter, get that. I was saying he's had a rough time. It's reflected in the polls.
Snapping his fingers.
Well, I want to ask the question because it seems that automatically you go to the idea of political and I guess when let's talk about Donald Trump Jr. is a great example of a meeting in Russia with the Russian lawyer and how this is kind of playing out. You see how this at least plays out in the echo chambers and social media that this is Democrats are out to get, and even the president says this, but they're out to get, and it doesn't matter what it is. But then you see others that say, well, this is important and this is more than politics. This is about, you know, your country and not necessarily having a foreign hostile government interfere with our election. Where are we with that? I mean, Chris, do you believe at all that it could possibly more than just Democrats that are mad that Hillary Clinton lost when it comes to this this story about Russia?
I mean, look, after 9 months of all of these investigations and all these hearings and all of this stuff, I mean, the only thing they've got is this goofy, poorly thought through meeting. And I think every listener ought to type in Tracy Seffel, S-E-F-L, and the Washington Post, and they all ought to read her op-ed in the Washington Post from last week about opposition research and how what happened here wasn't opposition research. And I don't contest any of Tracy's points on that, but there just isn't anything really to the story that Trump and his leadership and the campaign itself and the actual vote taken in November were all sort of manipulated by the red. That is a, you know, pink unicorn dancing on a teacup or something. I mean, it doesn't exist. Okay. What exists is a president who is the most unusual president we've probably had since Andrew Jackson. He is the most deeply questioning of the status quo. He offends Republican status quo types like the Bushes and Democrat status quo types like Bill Clinton similarly, and all of Washington is united in its detestation for Donald Trump. And I think that's a big source of what you're seeing in the public sphere and therefore in the polls.
But does it go beyond Washington? I mean, I know that Washington and there's been drain the swamp and this fight between Trump and he's an outsider and Washington. I mean, because that's a talking point that's been used a lot that it's really it's because Donald Trump wants to come in and change things and these powerful people in D.C. don't want to change, so they're going to fight.
Sure.
Does it go beyond that? I mean, are we to the point where here we are in Chicago and we don't have anything to do with D.C. and there's a lot of people scratching their heads about what kind of president Donald Trump is?
I think that's fair. And while to a degree, I understand what Chris is saying, that it's been however many months now of this drip. But and I was sitting here trying to think of what's the analogy that I'm going for here. And so this is the best I think I have right now. Do you guys know what a salad spinner is?
Yeah, love those things.
I feel like that's what this Donald Trump Jr. story is right now. It's just a salad spinner because you had Jay Sekulow counsel this weekend on every single Sunday show, who bizarrely said, well, the Secret Service vetted the Russian meeting. No, they didn't. Or if they did, Donald Trump is in even more trouble because that means he knew about the meeting. Donald Trump Jr. had no Secret Service protection at the time of his bizarre, ill-fated,
Jay Sekulow
unfortunate meeting.
Like that wrong, but does not make a conspiracy between Putin and Trump or Putin and Manafort or Putin and anybody else.
I think what's concerning to Justin's question of how this affects beyond the Beltway, it's that kind
of... I hosted Beyond the Beltway last night.
There you go.
Oh, sorry. Thanks for having me on. Jeez. I think that it is this sort of bizarre, bewildering salad spinner type story that Americans are sick of, really don't want to know the ins and outs of, don't wish to be fed every day a new dose of whatever nonsense it is from whichever side. I don't want it either. I am terrified every morning to look at Twitter and think, oh God, what has he said now? And know that that's how the day is going to go. So it is well beyond the Beltway.
But that is distinct. I don't deny what Tracy's saying. There are people who have never liked, and Trump is never going to be forgiven for winning. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There are folks out there, Tracy is among them, I believe, and so is Dave Lundy, who they're never going to cotton to anything that Trump says or does. There were times when I stood up and applauded Barack Obama. I don't think Trump will ever experience that from a wide variety of activist Democrats and lefties and progressives and people like that. And God bless them for it. I mean, they don't like the guy. That's fine. You know, this is America. But that's very different from saying there was collusion and saying that Putin, you know, manipulated the outcome of the election, when I think we can pretty much say, you know, and I've supported the investigations, I've supported the hearings, I think that's important, I think we should get to the bottom of it, find out what the heck was going on. But there is nothing there. What does exist, there's hatred for Trump, there's Trump trying to get something done, there's an attempt to disqualify him from the presidency, and then there are the issues that confront the regular Americans. And that's why we're going to talk about healthcare.
All right,
before
Chris Roebling,
we get there, Donald Trump had an opportunity today in declaring this Made in America Week, and by doing his big kickoff event, talking about showcasing the importance of manufacturing in this country and what that means for jobs and economies and communities and so forth. There are very few ideas that are more broadly bipartisan popular than the Made in America idea. And yet, Donald Trump's own White House screwed it all up because somebody asked Sean Spicer, well, what about Ivanka's company? Yeah. She doesn't make anything in America. And he said, well, that's irrelevant to what we're doing here.
Yeah,
so
it was an opportunity. It was a foot-in-the-mouth moment for all of the...
He's his own worst enemy.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is his own worst enemy, and then he's got staffers like that.
Yeah, Chris Roebling, Tracy Seffel, Touche. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk healthcare. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Touche. Chris Roebling and Tracy Seffel in studio tonight. We talked a little bit about poll numbers and Russia. Now let's turn to healthcare. Breaking news right now. The sources out of Washington, including the CNN, saying that the GOP healthcare lacks the support it needs to proceed beyond the health of John McCain. I don't know which senators are on the fence, but it seems like they have him in the stories. What does this mean? I mean, does this mean that it's just some more time that needs to be put aside to negotiate?
For your listeners, it's Senator Moran, Republican of Kansas, and Senator Lee, Republican of Utah. They have just come out and said, we can't do this, closed door meetings, we're not happy with it, et cetera. And that effectively kills the bill.
Well, Chris, what do you say? I mean, where are we with this?
It effectively postpones adoption of the bill. Let's not say kills the bill, because this bill is not going to be killed for a good long time. Look, Republicans are in a pickle because you've got Republican governors who accepted the devil's candy of, you know, subsidization for an increase in the eligibility for Medicaid participation. Mm-hmm. And that was to sunset shortly after it began. And the federal government is, you know, those governors are fighting tooth and nail for every dime that they can get. They neither want the money to go away, nor do they want to return Medicaid eligibility to where it was historically until Barack Obama and the Democrats in Congress expanded it for Obama.
Well, I mean, your devil's candy may be to others, actual support for low-income people and the idea of being on Medicaid. A lot of governors, Republicans
Hold on.
No, but
nobody can stand up for Medicaid as a reasonable alternative for American health care. It is now well established in the literature that people without insurance have better health outcomes than people who are on Medicaid. Medicaid is nothing to aspire to. It is just a spending program to which Democrats have a profound addiction. That's untreated.
They've turned to lawyers. They've turned to the police departments.
Noting that the Senate Republican effort was dealt another devastating blow on Friday when major insurers who had heretofore been silent, they weren't going to say anything. They want nothing to do with this. But on Friday, it was like they couldn't help it anymore. And they came out with really strong letters and said, you know, we're disavowing this. We will not support this. And to have major insurers like Blue Cross Blue Shield come out and say, that was a good indication on just this past Friday where things were headed with the bill. Never mind what, you know, with Senator McCain, and we certainly wish him well with his recovery. But this is we're at a, whether we want to say kill or whatever we want to call it, it's not going anywhere. And that means the Trump White House is again scrambling to cobble together more than half a page of a tax reform plan to say what's next. It's not going to be health care.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. And I think that the good thing about Friday is it shows that the Republicans in the Senate were not going in there to curry favor with the health insurance lobby as the Obama administration had, having learned the lesson from Hillary Care, where all of the interest groups turned against Hillary Care back in the 1990s. I know that's ancient history for some people out there, but there are others among us who remember it. And so the Obama crowd, the Ezekiel Emanuel crowd, learned that and bought off AARP and bought off the American Hospital Association, bought off the American Medical Association, bought off the insurance lobby. I mean, that is how Obamacare became as big as it was. And the only way that they could buy off the unions was to grant them exemptions. So we have the Obamacare remains as odious and as unattractive and as unpopular as I think it ever has been, truly. That's where I differ with the polls. But that doesn't mean it's easy to unwind, because you've got a lot of benefits for which we cannot pay long term. They're right. Utterly irresponsible.
But what about
we have to take them away from people?
What about the idea that this Republican bill, not unlike the last Republican Senate bill, was polled very unpopular as well?
I know.
I mean, it feels that the American people are responding to whatever the Senate or the House wants to do when it comes to repeal and replace, and not necessarily buying into it. So,
absolutely.
So what does that mean?
Well, it means that this is going to be not happening. I mean, I'll say it again. I don't think healthcare has any sort of path forward here. And it's, you know, every time we joke about things way in the past, it's worth remembering that the current Senate Republican bill would allow insurers to raise premiums up to 5 times as much on older Americans than younger Americans. So the coalescence of opposition around this bill is only going to grow over the next week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And we've seen that to be true. That's been the trajectory. Continued opposition, growing opposition.
Very short. I think both of your points remind us that the Senate Republicans, notwithstanding the November election results, failed to build any kind of narrative, let alone supportive constituencies based on that narrative, for the kind of dramatic change to add transparency to the market, to add choice to the market, to empower individuals who are unable to get what they need out of the marketplace, and to create safety nets for folks in special circumstances. That is a massive failure of Republicans on Capitol Hill. And it's especially on a night like tonight where they announced what they did. It's impossible not to remember that.
Well, the announcement that we're talking about, sources saying that they do not have enough votes for the health care bill in the Senate. So we don't know what that means, if they're going to delay, if they're going to kill, if they're going to rewrite. A lot of things to do here. Chris Roebling, Tracy Seffel, in Touche tonight. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks.